books, so. Tasyam Vishuta Karana Shiva Varvikaya Padvasanam Jitamarun Manasa Shritaksha Stule Dhara Bhagavat Pratirupa Etad Jayam Stadavya Vahito Visarjat Samadho Tasyam
in
Bhadrak Ashram.
Vishuddha,
purified.
Karanaha,
his senses.
Shiva,
pure.
Vaha,
water.
Vigahya,
bathing in. Padva,
having fixed.
Asanam,
sitting position.
Jitta,
controlled.
Marut,
breathing process.
Manasa,
by the mind.
Ahrita,
withdrawn.
Akshaha,
his senses.
Stule,
physical.
Dhara,
he concentrated.
Bhagavat Pratirupe,
on the exact form of the Lord.
Etat,
the mind.
Dhyayan,
meditating upon.
Tat,
that.
Avyavahitaha,
without stopping.
Yasrijat,
he entered.
Samadho,
into trance.
In Bhadrak Ashram, Dhruva Maharaja's senses became completely purified because he bathed regularly in the crystal clear purified water. He fixed his sitting position and by yogic practice controlled the breathing process and the air of life. In this way, his senses were completely withdrawn. Then he concentrated his mind on the Archavigraha form of the Lord, which is the exact replica of the Lord, and thus meditating upon him, entered into complete trance.
Can you shut that off?
Oh, that's for the flowers?
Yeah, but I can shut it.
Well, I don't want the flowers to be unhappy.
Well, for a little while, it's actually.
Shanti, shanti, shanti. Purport. Here's a description of the Ashtanga Yoga system to which Dhruva Maharaj was already accustomed. Ashtanga Yoga was never meant to be practiced in a fashionable city. Dhruva Maharaj went to Bhadrak Ashram and in a solitary place, alone, he practiced yoga. He concentrated his mind on the Archavigraha, the worshipable deity of the Lord, which exactly represents the Supreme Lord. And thus, thinking constantly of that deity, he became absorbed in trance. Worship of the Archavigraha is not idol worship. The Archavigraha is an incarnation of the Lord in a form appreciable by a devotee.
Appreciable?
Yep. I think that's promising. Therefore, devotees engage in the temple in the service of the Lord as archa vigraha, a form made of stula, material objects, such as stone, metal, wood, jewels, or paint. All of these are called stul, or physical representations. Since the devotees follow the regulative principles of worship, even though the Lord is there in his physical form, he is non-different from his original spiritual form. Thus, the devotee gets the benefit of achieving the ultimate goal of life, that is to say, becoming always absorbed in thought of the Lord. This incessant thought of the Lord, as prescribed in the Bhagavad Gita, makes one the topmost yogi. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarine Tasyam Vishuddha Karana Shiva Var Vigahya padvasanam jitamarun manasaritaksha stule dhara bhagavat pratirupa etad dhyayam stad avyavahito vyasrijat samadho. So the Bhagavatam here is describing Dhruva Maharaja's retirement from engagement in affairs pertaining to the material world. In his childhood, he practiced the yoga system and had personal darshan of Krishna. Then he married and took charge of the kingdom. But in the mature stage, he that same kingdom that he went through so much trouble to attain, he gave up and he went to the forest. There he purified his senses, karana, vishuddha karana, completely purified his senses, and bathed in the pure water there, and padvasanam, he sat in a fixed posture, jitamarun, controlled his breathing process, and withdrew his senses and mind. So yam niyam asana, this is the eightfold yoga system to observe physical and mental discipline, to sit in a suitable place, shucho deshe pratishtapya sthiram asanam atmanaha Natyutram Nati Nicham Chailajana Kushotam. In Bhagavad Gita, to sit in a particular yogic seat, then pratyahar, to pranayam, to practice control of the breathing, pratyahar, to withdraw the mind and senses from material things. In this way, to concentrate the mind on the form of the Lord, dhyan, dharana, samadhi, to fix the mind completely. This was his program. Prabhupada mentions it wasn't the city yoga of practicing in a gymnasium or something like that. Real yoga. And his meditation was on the deity of the Lord, Archavigraha. And Srila Prabhupada has a short discussion here of his of deity worship as he's presented it, that the deity is Krishna, that there's he perfectly represents Krishna, or exactly represents Krishna. And when the devotee follows the rules and regulations for worshipping the Lord, then the Lord is present, the Lord appears in a form non-different from his original spiritual form, so that the devotee's service to the deity is not any different from service to the original personality of Godhead. And so the devotee, who's always absorbed in serving the deity, is always absorbed in serving Krishna. There's no difference. And by always thinking of the deity, dhyayam tad avyavahita, constantly thinking of the deity, one enters into trance. That's the method of sitting and following the Eightfold Process is not practical. It's just not practical. People are not going to do it. They'll make a show, but they won't do it. But the process of worshipping the deity is practically demonstrated all over the world. The deity is being worshipped. And the devotees are absorbed in meditation on Krishna by this practical deity worship. Now, what's your question?
Well, I have a few questions. One is, you mentioned you went to the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Is the forest or the Himalayan mountains?
It's the forest in the Himalayas. Bhadrakashram. So it's a forest and it's in the Himalayas. Of course, Bhadrakashram. Yeah. Bhadrakashram. It's a forest in the Himalayas. That's what it says.
You probably wouldn't know which particular deity he was meditating on.
Mm-mm. Wouldn't know.
And then there was a question previous. Was it his son who became liberated and reached nirvana?
Utkala.
Huh?
Utkala.
And he was this pure devotee, it seems.
Utkala.
So what's this nirvana that he...
Nirvana, shantim nirvana parama matsamstham arigachchati in the Bhagavad Gita. Nirvana means cessation of material miseries. The Buddhist conception of nirvana is that you get free from, that material miseries are due to desire, desires due to individuality. So the solution to the problem is to snuff out individuality. And then false ego, essentially. And when the ego is gone, then there's no more desire, then there's no more entanglement and sense gratification, then samsara is finished and material miseries are gone. That's their approach to nirvana. Vaishnava approach to nirvana is to hitvanyata rupam svarupena vyavasati, to give up this false engagement, but to be engaged in the constitutional fashion, service of Krishna. So it's nirvana, but it's a different idea. Nirvana doesn't have just like advaita, oneness. It doesn't have to mean, as the Mayavadis propose, Brahman doesn't have to mean impersonal Brahman. Nirvana doesn't have to mean voidism.
Okay. So nirvana just means cessation from material desires, material
miseries.
So any stage above this, material world would be nirvana. Whether even if you go back to Godhead, that's also
nirvana.
Nirvana, because
shantim nirvana parama samstahamani gashchati, the Bhagavad Gita, labhante brahma nirvana. In several places nirvana is mentioned, but it doesn't mean the Buddhist idea.
I'm just influenced by the Buddhists. Any other question I had? I don't have any other questions.
I have a question because of deity worship. It said that deity worship is for nullifies.
Didn't say that here. Doesn't say that here.
Yeah, but it's
sometimes it says that.
It's mentioned often, so I was wondering, because on one side it's for beginners,
and the other side it's also
Brahma initiated. Actually, do it. So
that's a beginner. Initiation means beginning. Brahman initiation is actually means initiation. Anyway, we have two kinds of initiation. But Brahman initiation, you can say, is the real initiation, formal initiation. Although we take it that initiation begins actually from Harinam. That's when the relationship is established. But anyway, initiation, that's the beginning. To be a Brahman initiated, that doesn't mean that you're, a very high stage of, that's just okay, now you can be initiated, you can accept diksha now that you're a little, you've been following for a year maybe, so now you can be initiated with the Gayatri Mantra. But that's not, doesn't mean that one is on a very advanced platform of devotional service. He's still a beginner. But this deity worship, of course, it's for the beginners and also for the most advanced devotees. Rupa Goswami, they're also worshipping the deity. It's not that
What is that? Sri Vigraha Radha Nityananda. The spiritual master is also worshipping the deity. It doesn't mean it's only the rookies, the gross neophytes, but all the devotees. But it's especially essential for the newer devotees. What else?
Okay, now we got into initiations.
Mm-hmm.
First initiation, what did Harinam initiation?
Mm-hmm.
When did that start? Was that with Bhakti Siddhanta?
No, giving the holy name of Krishna. Now, I don't know about the history of, you know, formalization of, you know, how all that works, but giving Harinam just means giving Harinam. Giving. Now, as far as formalities, I don't really know at what stage what got formalized.
Bhakti Siddhanta, did they have formalities?
I assume they did. In Gaudiya Math, what we call second initiation is Diksha.
Right.
And what we call first initiation is Nam. But I don't know what ceremony is, what procedures they followed. I don't really know.
And is Harinam initiation good enough to take one back to Godhead?
Yeah. One follows seriously.
What?
If one follows seriously.
Yeah, obviously.
Even Jiva Goswami says that you don't need any initiation, that just the holy name itself is powerful enough. But then he says that actually, because our mentality to chant properly, we need the deity worship. So on the one side, chanting, and there's lots of evidence, he gives lots of evidence, that chanting alone, you don't. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
We need initiation, or we need.
You don't need initiation.
Because you said deity worship. We need deity worship.
Well, to do deity worship, you have to be initiated.
Okay.
So the deity worship isn't needed. Initiation isn't needed. Nothing's needed but Harinam. And there's, he quotes, Shastric evidence, several points that uphold this. But then he turns around and says, "But who can, you know, who'll chant Harinam?" With the proper mentality. And therefore, the deity worship is essential, and therefore initiation is required. The initiation and the deity worship are connected. The initiation is needed so that you can worship the deity. Without being initiated, one shouldn't worship the deity. So therefore, if we're going to worship the deity, if that's important, then initiation is important. Otherwise, he gives evidence just Harinam is enough.
Harinam initiation. But
he doesn't even say initiation, just says Harinam.
Not initiation, but you're getting it from somewhere.
Yeah, somehow or other. In other words, Krishna is independent. That's the case he makes. That Krishna is independent, the holy name is independent, doesn't depend on anything else or anyone else or any formalities or anything. Just Krishna himself can do everything. That's the case that he makes. But then he turns around and says that in practical application, we need to follow these things to receive regular initiation, to worship the deity, and so on. But in principle, Krishna is independent. He can do as he likes. Harinam doesn't depend on anything else. That's the case that's made. But then in terms of what we should actually do, we need these things.
I was told many years ago, which I haven't heard Prabhupada say, but that someone asked Srila Prabhupada about Shikshastakam, if initiation was so important.
Why isn't it mentioned in the Shikshastakam?
Right.
And then Prabhupada said, no, perhaps you haven't considered, then what does he say? Trinadapi sunichena tarodapi sahishnana. To be humble means that you have to submit to the bona fide spiritual master.
Right. How can you feel lower than a store in the street unless you're at the lowest feet of your spiritual master?
Right. Yeah, I've seen that letter.
You've seen it? I haven't seen it. I've definitely heard it.
Yes.
Most things I heard many years ago seem to be pretty...
Yeah, the things that we heard right in the beginning, we have a certain confidence level in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, because often we hear some criticism against the Gaudiya Math that they give like Harinam initiation, the Harinam, without asking for following principles. So, when that is it that Bhaktisiddhanta, how he did it?
Prabhupada said that in first initiation we should be liberal, and second initiation should be strict. Now, that he wasn't so liberal that he didn't require that we follow these principles. But he said first initiation should be liberal. Why should we criticize Gaudiya Math anyway? What is our, you know, why should we be doing that? There's not enough, you know, materialists in the world to criticize that we have to criticize Gaudiya Math.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily criticism, but just try to understand why do they, you know, some of them don't care if they're following the principles.
Then that's another question. But our system is, you know, whatever they do, our system is that
right.
We require them, that one follow.
In the beginning, the first initiations,
Prabhupada was pretty lenient.
What were the... Were there the rules they had to follow in the very beginning?
Yeah, the rules were there. How well they were following them. How long they'd been following them. I mean, I was initiated 2 months after I joined.
Was this only in the beginning, or Prabhupada did this like only kind of after, was after 10 years, or was it in...
No, later, no, I mean, four rules were required. That was clear. But, you know, waiting a year and all that was later. Otherwise, people were initiated. You know, it wasn't like I was a special case that I got initiated for 2 months.
Yeah.
We all did.
I was in 4 months in the temple.
It was pretty typical.
So, why did this change? I mean, now we have like a whole system. We have to.
Well, you know, you kind of probably just bootstrapped the organization, you know, he just somehow or other got things started, recruited some people, got things going. Then after a while, he said we should, you know, boil the milk. You increase it by just adding more or sometimes adding water. But you boil it and it becomes thick. So Prabhupada, in the beginning, you know, kind of put the thing together with whatever, you know, needed to be done. Then he wanted some higher, you know, he raised the standards. You know, just like you start a business, so you somehow or other, you know, you do the accounts yourself, you handle the inventory, you know, from out of your kitchen, you know, you just do it. But then after the business grows a little bit, then you hire a regular accountant, you start, you know, having regular inventory, you start doing things in a business, more business-like fashion. But to start the business, just any which way, you know, you keep the inventory in the back of your car and you just do it. And then after it's going, then you make it more regular. So Prabhupada did it that way. He somehow or other got it going. Then he raised the bar, you know, raised the standards.
It's almost like buying stock, you know, it just comes out. It's like new company, real cheap, and then it goes up.
Yeah, then it goes up. You know, like the deity worship in the beginning, Prabhupada said that you should see them every day. That was the deity worship. They used to offer them a little puff rice and a little fruit in the morning, a little puff rice and milk in the evening, and see them every day. That was, you know, the deity worship. You know, it was very, very simple. And gradually Prabhupada introduced, and even Nectar of Devotion hadn't been written. So, you know, none of the stuff was there. You know, now they're doing all these fancy stuff. I don't even know what it all is. You know, from different handbooks and so on. you know, they've introduced a lot of things that make it more in line with traditional rituals and so on. But, you know, in the beginning it was just to see the deities. Then gradually Prabhupada introduced something, introduced something, introduced something, introduced something.
Another question about the deities and the deity worship. And when Prabhupada was here, you know, up to even the time that he left, we were doing certain things in deity worship, and now apparently we're doing things differently. And what are we, which, you know, why did we change it? Prabhupada?
I suppose it depends what the things are.
Well, like for instance, arti, we offer to Prabhupada, and then we go up. Now you offer to Krishna, and then you offer as remnants to the others.
Yeah, I suppose they're putting these things in line with the in the standard manuals. Prabhupada at some point gave direction that they should, you know, systematize these things. Chaitirtha at one point he gave him that job. They should systemize it according to Pancharatra Pradeep and all of these things. I guess they're going by the book.
It's still not. It's still, every people do it all differently, though.
Probably
just,
so.
Huh?
Probably so.
Oh, they do. Even the experts are saying, one of them is saying, I just wrote some. I'm only getting involved in this because of Boston. Boston does things differently. So I'm trying to find out what. And I'm finding out that, like Nrisimha Kavacha, he's supposed to be the expert. He says, you offer it to Prabhupada and he offers it on you, and you do it the old way, he says. But in DeityWorship.com it says something else. In Krishna Balaram Deity Worship book it says something else. So it's like, who, you know, so I wrote some letter, never got an answer.
You're not going to get one from me either.
Well, not I didn't want it from you as to what we should do. I want it from you as, why are we changing? I mean,
well, that's the reason they changed, because they looked at the book and said, well, Prabhupada wants us to go by the book. The book is different from what Prabhupada actually told us. But he told us to go by the book, so we're going to go by the book.
Yeah, if he told us to go by the book.
Yeah, I think there was some direction like that to Jayatirtha. You know, he wanted it systematized. Told them they should see what they're doing at Radharamana. They should use these manuals and so on. So I guess they tried to systematize it accordingly, and it didn't always match with Prabhupada. It was like Prabhupada sometimes used to chant the songs, and if you look in the actual songbook, it's a little different than the way Prabhupada used to chant it.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You know, Prabhupada just did it as he, you know, as he knew it, as he had it. But then the devotees usually follow the songbook where the author's actual words are written down.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Do both.
Yeah, people do both. You know, you hear people chanting, like the Gaur Arti song. Some chant it the way it is in the book. Some chant it the way Prabhupada chanted it.
Well, what was the difference? Do you remember any of it?
Oh, some small things. Parama Rasala, Sunichai Rasala. You know, Prabhupada just had a few words that were different. And some people chant it the way they heard it from Prabhupada, and some people chant it the way that it's, that it is in the book.
Yes.
Sri Sri Radha Sri Lagovinda Deva. Otherwise, it's Sriman Radha Sri Lagovinda Deva. So some people chant it the way it is in the book. Some people chant it, say, well, you know, Prabhupada chanted it this way. I like it that way too.
And something with Rupa, Sri Sanatan. I don't know if they say Sri Bhot or something.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't even know about that.
There's also another one with the swan of my mind. And what's the
Krishna Tritiya.
Yeah, yeah, that's written differently.
A little different. Yeah, Prabhupada very often, you know, just said things a little differently. So then you get some people will do it the way Prabhupada did, and some people will do it the way the book says. So you have a similar circumstance in the deity worship.
Yeah, I personally, I really think, though, that deity worship should be a little more the same everywhere.
I'm not going to give an opinion about deity worship.
Well, I'm not saying which way is I think just we should follow some standard.
Yeah, I'll let the let our governing body deal with that.
So what's your opinion about the governing
body?
It's a body and it governs. Any other questions? Yes.
Maybe I have something completely different. It's related to Dhruva Maharaj. I was thinking, Dhruva Maharaj was like praying for this kingdom, and he approached Krishna for it. So I was just thinking, what should be like our approach to our material desires? Should we pray to Krishna? Because often we hear prayers, okay, please Krishna, I don't want to have any material desires. Sometimes I said, okay, you should pray to Krishna for your material desires, but then please Krishna fulfill me this material desires.
Prabhupada didn't recommend that he didn't encourage us to pray to Krishna for material things. So those will be provided anyway. Just like, you know, give us this day our daily bread. Krishna gives the bread anyway. You know, the animals don't pray and they get their food. So Prabhupada said, you know, what's the need? These things are all arranged by the material nature. Food, shelter, sex. These things are, because we have this body, so that these things are all arranged. Just as the body is arranged, the necessities of the body are arranged by material nature. So Prabhupada didn't encourage us to pray to Krishna for these things that are already there. And Dhruva Maharaj condemned himself, that it was foolish of me. Of course, the Bhagavatam says that if you're going to pray for these things, then at least pray to Krishna. Instead of praying to the demigods, please give me this, please give me that, well, at least pray to Krishna. But better to pray to Krishna, please let me be engaged in your service.
Sometimes when I'm like reading Shikshastikam, then it said, okay, I don't have any desires for wealth, a woman, and this and that. When I read this, then sometimes I feel okay. I feel like being a hypocrite when I'm chanting this, because I don't feel like being that, because there are still many desires there. So.
Well, we should cultivate the idea that I may have those desires, but that's not really what I want. I know that I have some desire for fame. I know I have some desire for beautiful women. I know I have some desire for followers. But it's not that I'm going to pray to Krishna to increase those things. If anything, Krishna, please decrease my desires. I don't have to pray to Krishna, please give me more desire for fame, more desire for followers, more desire for women. That's what we're trying to diminish. So better to pray to Krishna. Please engage me in your service.
And he will do the rest.
He'll do the rest.
When we're saying this prayer, we're saying it, this is what Lord Chaitanya said.
Yes.
So are we supposed to be saying it like this is what I also am thinking or feeling?
Well, we would like to follow that ideal, at least, to make that our ideal.
Okay, what about the woman? When they say it, they have no desire for a beautiful woman.
I hope they don't.
No, that's like me saying I have no desire for handsome men. Okay, that's not a problem.
Prabhupada said, there was some lecture he said, for man, woman is the woman. And for woman, man is the woman.
Okay, so they can say woman, but think of man. Because I don't think they should change the word.
No.
But sometimes I feel like, because, there's often different instructions for men and different instructions for women. For example, it's said that a woman needs a husband, to get spiritual progress. So it said men should give up this desire, on the other hand, women should have this desire, have a good husband to bring back to Godhead.
Still, women, men, everyone should cultivate this sense that my real necessity is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. No one has to tell women, you know, and give them instruction that you should desire to have a man, you should desire to have a husband. You know, no one has to go to school for that, but the thing that we want to invoke is that spirit that, you know, I want to be engaged in the service of Krishna. And that's for everyone, man, woman, whatever.
Can't think of any other questions.
Then we're done.